Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. I wanted to give a little background context to this particular episode. This episode was one of the first ones that I recorded back in September 2024, if not the actual first one that I recorded. I didn't release it because the audio was pretty bad, and didn't want to subject everyone to that, so I never released it. But I, through the magic of technology, I was able to get the audio cleaned up, and now I have another episode for y'all to enjoy. So enjoy, and we will catch you again on the next episode. Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hand podcast, a podcast about Kenpo and about the martial arts and about folks chit-chatting it up and getting your story, getting your journey. I am Reggie Darden, and today I have with me Tony Nomikos, and we're just gonna just get into it and just talk, and we'll see what we get. So. Just to kind of give a little background on myself, I started Kenpo in the early to mid 90s. I've also done some Taekwondo and some Hapkido, some boxing. My other, I guess you could call it, core system is Capoeira. I've been doing that for a long time. And now I am currently training in an American Kenpo school. And just enjoying that. As of this recording, I just recently got my green belt, so pretty excited there. And we're just gonna move right along here. So I will let Tony go ahead and tell me and the rest of those that may be listening. How did you get started in the martial arts and Kenpo? How did Kenpo find you? And tell us about your journey.
Yeah, basically I started with Taekwondo when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I got up to my red belt, and then we changed the guys that do the grading, the lead instructors type. And he basically, it used to be really good until he just started passing everyone for, it just like turned basically into a McDojo. And we just thought, this isn't good. And then I left that and started Washinkan Karate, which is, it's a great style. It is really, really good. Yeah, you learn a lot, and the stuff you actually learn in like, you know, with your sequences and all that, you do put them into practice with like your sparring and your competitions and whatnot. And like with my Kenpo, like I only started that about a year or two ago, but it found me, like, ever since I watched the Perfect Weapon movie with Jeff Speakman in it. I watched that back in the 90s and I fell in love with it. And when I was living in Sydney, I was looking for a Kenpo school, but there just wasn't many around back then. It was mainly Taekwondo, boxing, kickboxing, that sort of thing, like all the mainstream stuff you see today. And Kenpo, I love it. I love Kenpo. The techniques, the sequences, they flow very, very nicely. They flow beautifully. I was actually really surprised because you watch some stuff on YouTube and whatnot, and it looks really technical, but once you actually do them, they're actually easier than you think. So it's like, with me past martial arts background, it kind of fit me like a glove. So, I'm just getting back in the Kenpo now after having a couple of years off with, injuries and whatnot. But, I absolutely love it. I do have some questions about it though. Like, how long you been doing Kenpo for?
So I guess in total, about, 5 to 6 years now, between the two schools. So,
what?
My original school, I was there about two or three years, and my current school, I've been about there about 2 or 3 years.
What's the difference between, the American Kenpo, like you said, and Jeff Speakman's 5.0? What's the difference? Is there a big difference?
Since I have not trained in Speakman's version, I'll just speak as I know it. Listeners, internets, I'm sure I'm gonna hear some things when I kind of give my understanding of it. I can't wait for the comments. As I understand it, as Ed Parker was evolving Kenpo, over the years, he's coming up with different principles and guidelines or a structure for Kenpo. Mm-hmm. It was constantly changing the techniques and
it's constantly evolving. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's constantly evolving. So as it was evolving, it kind of went through different phases, and some kind of refer to those as, at one point, things started out where, it was 32 techniques in each belt, and then there was a transition to 24 techniques, and then a transition to 16 techniques.
Yeah.
And kind of every time that there was one of these kind of big changes to it, some would consider that, the original, 32 techniques, that was the 1.0 version of American Kenpo. And then, when it changed to 24, and then that was the 2.0. And right up until Ed Parker died, he was kind of gearing up to kind of make another change to the evolution. And Jeff Speakman kind of, took the helm of, since Ed Parker didn't name a successor before he died, nobody really had a sense of saying, okay, this is the direction that Kenpo needs to go in and whatnot. And Jeff Speakman
constantly evolving. Well, I mean, they've even had a groundwork into Kenpo now, which I don't believe they did back in the day. So
that's one of the big points with the Speakman, is that he saw that at the time, in the early 90s, the UFC and things started getting popular, and the martial arts community really got the wake up call that, hey, we need, grappling and ground techniques and whatnot.
Well, you do. 5% of fights end up on the ground anyway. So, it's a good thing to have. But unfortunately, what I see, I've watched a lot of Kenpo tournaments and all that, it looks like there's nothing that stands out about it from what I've seen. Don't get me wrong, I love the art, but they throw one of three kicks. Front kick, side kick, and roundhouse, and it's just punches and grapple. It looks like an MMA fight. It is it just seems to me that all those sequence, five swords, twisted wing, whatever, it all goes out the window. Soon as there's a combat situation, all that stuff goes right out the window. It's, I don't know, maybe you can shed some light on it, because when I watch the fights and that, like Kenpo versus Kenpo, it just looks like any other MMA fight or whatever. Like, Because we spend a long time learning these techniques, but when it's actually put into a combat situation, it goes out the window. Whereas Muay Thai, Taekwondo, they actually put those techniques into their sparring, which I don't understand why Kenpo doesn't. So,
well, as I understand it, that's one of the things with the Speakman 5.0 is that he integrated jiu-jitsu and the ground fighting techniques within Kenpo. So not just saying, oh, okay, well, I'm learning BJJ and I'm going to do BJJ and Kenpo. He kind of, reconfigured and evolved BJJ with the Kenpo principles. Yeah. So you're doing Kenpo on the ground and kind of melding that piece into it. Joe Speakman said that, as he talked with Ed Parker did, see that, ground fighting and grappling was something that, that needed to be addressed in Kenpo, and that, had he continued to live, that he would have, started integrating that sort of thing into Kenpo. So that's why Mr. Speakman, calls it Kenpo 5.0, because that we kind of saw that as the next evolution. So
yeah.
Once again, that's the way that I understand it. Internet, I'm sure you're gonna correct me. And actually I would love to talk with those that are training in the Speakman 5.0 system, because I certainly would like to learn more about it. But I'm sure y'all will let me know in the comments and forums and whatnot. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that. But that's the way that I understand it.
I just find it weird. Like you got boxing, they practice punches, they put that into practice, like all the pad work they do, they actually do use those combos, but Kenpo doesn't. Like, I've watched a lot of Kenpo fights and I haven't seen one five swords or fatal DV. I haven't seen not one. It's all front kicks, side kicks and roundhouses, hooks, straight punches and the odd takedown. That's all I ever see in it. And I'm thinking, well, why do we learn all this if it's not put into practice out in a combat situation? That's what I don't understand about it. Like with Washington, when I was doing that, we learned the locks, we learned the throws, we learned the takedowns, we incorporated all that, and the sparring was brutal. It really was. It was basically full contact sparring, like even in training, and the gradings were even worse. But the thing is, it taught us how to take a hit too. So, but like, when we got tagged, really got tagged, we'd actually stop and make sure our opponent's all right. And then if he wanted to keep going, we kept going. If he wanted to stop and have a rest, we're like, all right, cool, no problem. So that's the way we operate. And then I came into Kenpo, you're seeing all these beautiful moves, but they got the opponent's just standing there. And in a fight, that's not going to happen. I mean, it's trained with no, I understand it among the lower belts, like getting the technique right, and until green belt, say, like, then you can start adding a little bit of resistance to it, but like among the black belts, it's still the same training as if they were white belts. It's just more techniques. Mm-hmm. So
I think it really depends on the school and the instructor. I mean, there are definitely some that are more interested in I don't know, I guess you could say the superficial things, the rank, or being able to say that, oh, well, I, trained with this person, and are less interested in working on the effectiveness. And, you're going to have both sides. You're going to have the sides where the instructors in the school are really working to have an effective system, and then you're going to have ones that are not. So I think it just really depends on on, you know, who you're watching, who you're learning from.
But like, I watched the Kenpo 5.0 black belt grading, I think it was over in Vegas somewhere. And same thing, they're doing the lines and whatnot. I'm like, where's the resistance? Like, I mean, these guys are going for their black. Like, they should be able to do this thing, like, you know, like it should be like second nature to them. So, and when I watch a sparring with their same gradings, it's like, this looks like a something in the cage or karate combat or something like that. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the art. It would work very well out in the street. It really would. But the thing is, what a lot of people I find is like, they might train twice a week or whatever, but they don't go home and practice it. A lot of them don't, and it shows. It's compared to somebody that, you know, goes to training every week, like 2-3 times a week or whatever, and you can tell they've been practicing this stuff at home. That they have been, because their moves are more crisp and everything. But you get these people that you get these people that train one or twice a week and think they're the next Chuck Norris when they can't perform a thing.
Well, it's like with anything. I mean, yeah, you know, perfect practice makes perfect. So yeah, if you don't train, and this is regardless of the art, if you know, you don't make the most out of your training and you're not doing, you know, proper training, then that is going to hurt your effectiveness in a real life situation.
Taekwondo. Now, what ruined Taekwondo was the Olympics. And I think a lot of people will agree with that, because when I was training Taekwondo, we trained a real Taekwondo where it was hard training. Like, you know, the kicks were hard, this and that. What I've seen in the Olympics, my kids could probably win that. Like, it's ridiculous. It's garbage. And, I just don't see, like, you know, if you want to put a combat sport in the Olympics, you got to expect people to get hurt. Like, it's just the way it is. It's not a nice, snuggly little art. It's a proper martial art. Like, you know, in Korea, it's their national sport next to Hapkido and Tang Soo-do and whatever else comes from there. They're good arts, but unfortunately, the Olympics has put Taekwondo into a very bad spotlight. Because if you look at the Taekwondo back in the 2020 Olympics compared to the Taekwondo back in the 80s, it's very different. Very different. It was hard back in the 80s. People actually went at it back then. These days, they're just dancing around one another. They don't even have their hands up. I'm thinking, what is going on? And I saw in the Olympics, I think it was the 2021, where the guy got knocked out and he won. I'm thinking, that's not how fights work. Like, you know, how can the guy that got knocked out claim the victory? He can't.
Yeah, it's a very, I'd say it's a very slippery slope. And you know, of course, with a separating the combat effectiveness versus, or, you know, the martial art versus the sport. I mean, obviously there are things that we learn in these arts that, you know, you can't do in a sport setting. And, I think there's a difficulty in finding the right mix of rules that both, you know, get the art and get the competition side. And there's a lot of variables that have to be kind of juggled around. So yeah, I think the system's not perfect, but it definitely needs, you know, a lot of reworking to, you know, to kind of appease everybody. But I think you have to look at sport martial arts and, you know, the, you know, quote unquote traditional martial arts, you have to look at them at a different lens, because they're not achieving the same goal.
If you look at Lethwei, you've heard of Lethwei, yeah?
No, I don't. Not familiar.
Yeah, that's sport. It's on the they usually have those on the Burmese Myanmar borders and that. That is That's real fighting, but it's still a sport, though. It is still a sport, but they use everything in his bare knuckle. I was actually watching some last night, and I'm thinking, wow, like you would that these people get disqualified in Olympic or whatever. These people, they really go at it. They people do get hurt a lot, but it's proper. You know what I mean? Like it's, I don't really have words for it. It's brutal. Yeah, it's brutal. People do get hurt, but that's the way it is. And unfortunately, a lot of dojos in the West don't emphasize on sparring because they're afraid of people getting hurt. I'm thinking, well, you're learning a combat sport. Like, you know, if you weren't taught to block, don't spar. But if you were taught to block and you get tagged, don't quit. That's just the way it is. Block it next time. So, but unfortunately, a lot of dojos don't do it anymore. A lot of them don't. And I think sparring is probably one of the most important parts of martial arts because it actually shows what you've been learning, if it actually works or not. And unfortunately, the Western civilization, especially America, is littered with McDojos, littered with them. And it's coming into Australia and it's starting to come over here in New Zealand as well. And you walk into these places and you can tell their belts were bought. They weren't earned. And that's what I like about Kenpo, especially the 5.0 system, because to get to your first dan, it takes at least could be 5 to 6 years or so. Like, you know, you actually have to earn your black belt. You have to actually earn it, not buy it like a lot of people seem to want to do these days. Like when you see on the internet, oh yeah, 6 months training and you're guaranteed a black belt. That's bullshit. It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, all these McDojos that are popping up all over the place, it's put the traditional martial arts in a very bad spotlight because they see all these McDojos around and then they think, oh yeah, here's another McDojo. It's like, you know, then they don't get the students and everyone seems to be an MMA fanboy these days. So, and don't get me wrong, MMA is good, but the MMA gyms don't actually teach MMA. They don't actually teach it. Yeah, like, you know, you look at their schedules. It's either BJJ from 10 to 11, then boxing, then kickboxing, then Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Where's the MMA? No one wants to spend 9 hours in the gym. So they've got other things to do. So what I like about Washinkan and what my sensei told me is, like, we teach everything. We even teach weapons as well. Like gun defenses and whatnot. Like, and my sensei told me, like, and I could actually agree with him that I'd be more of afraid of a knife than a gun because a gun can only fire in one direction. But a knife, on the other hand, we do a lot of knife defense. And the way we do the knife defenses are like he'll have his plastic knives, but he'd have a red he'd paint the blade and red. So when we do go at it, We look at ourselves afterwards and we're like cut left and right. So we try to minimize that. But gun defense, like if you got a gun at your head, all you got to do is move your head. The bullet's going to go straight past you. It's not going to hit you. But with a knife, on the other hand, there's so many different ways they can slash you, slash and stab you. So that's one thing we did train a lot in. And I believe Kenpo does a bit of that too. Would that be right?
Yeah. There's a number of weapon defenses within the system.
And not only that, you train in weapons as well. Like I've seen in the yes. Kenpo 5.0 system, like the syllabus, that like you know, it's, like I was asking the sensei that day, I go, what's this? Oh, that's knife attacks. I'm like, oh, cool. You do knife attacks, and that's more up like brown belt, black belt level, but yeah, it's a book.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know a little bit of it, of everything within the system, and you know once again kind of comes down to you know the school and the instructors. Some schools integrate more other you know other items than some schools, you know, some schools are considered more traditional, and then there are some that are more progressive and add in more of the, you know, ground fighting or weapons or, you know, boxing footwork, you know. So I think when you're, you know, if you're someone that's searching for a school, you know, first need to kind of decide what your goal is. You know, is it more of the sport side, the, you know, sport competition side, or is it more of the, you know, real world street self-defense, you know, well, or, you know, are you just, you know, trying to get an exercise and, you know, look at the school and look at the instructor and kind of, you know, figure out if that school is right for you. So,
because when people go,
yeah, I think they're,
when people go, they are learning. They do want to go there to learn how to look after themselves. All right. That's basically why they're there. Otherwise they wouldn't exist. And then you get these McDojos who teach nonsense and they're dangerous. Because it gives these people a false sense of security that they can actually look after themselves. But when they're actually faced with it, all the stuff they learn does not work. It doesn't work. It just doesn't. And I watched this nonsense on YouTube the other week. There's no touch bullshit. And I'm thinking, oh, what the hell is this? It's George Gilman. He's probably the worst offender. And there's a few others. And I'm like, This stuff is going to get people killed. That's just what it boils down to. Because if you learn this stuff and if people actually believe this nonsense actually works, they're going to get mauled out in the streets. Because that's basically what you're prepping for is for the street. Not everyone wants to do the sports side of things, but people do walk into a dojo to learn how to defend themselves, and that's basically why they exist. If they learn this garbage that I see on YouTube, they'll end up just getting killed because they've got this false sense of security that they can actually perform this stuff, and they might be able to perform it, but it has no effectiveness. Whereas, like,
there's a lot of bad teachers. There's a lot of bad teachers and a lot of bad schools, and unfortunately, that puts a bad name on a lot of schools and a lot of systems, and that's why it's really important to, you know, to do your homework and to really, you know, just not take what a particular teacher is just giving you. You know, there has to be that pushback and that feedback, or you know, you have to ask questions. You have to kind of seek out the information for yourself and not just take what's given to you at face value. And that's
dojo and it's full of black belts, you know for a fact that most of these people did not earn that. They bought them. It's like, you know, you walk into a dojo and there might be, if there's like two or three black belts and a range of colored belts, chances are it's going to be a proper dojo. But like, I've walked into schools before and walked straight out because I'll look at them when they've got 7-year-old black belts. I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, when 7-year-olds are trying to take the class, it's like, this is ridiculous. What does a 7-year-old know? Like, I mean, it's, I believe no child should get a black belt before at least 16, 17, if they've been training a while. This 7-year-old stuff or 8-year-old or anything below that 16, 17-year-old, they shouldn't be having a black belt. They just shouldn't. They'd have to be Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris rolled into one to get that before that, but I haven't seen one yet. But I've seen plenty of child black belts, plenty of them. And then I look at the stuff that they're teaching. It's like, it may work, but chances are it won't. Like Aikido, for example, right? A lot of people dismiss Aikido. I don't, because the way I understand it is that all martial arts is based on deception and surprise. because otherwise this stuff won't work. And like, you know, I see a lot of people on YouTube and whatnot saying, oh, Aikido would never work in an MMA ring. Nobody's denying that. But I have seen it out in the streets and I have seen it work. I had this, when I was working in the clubs, had this guy, and he was the most unassuming bloke in the world. And then this a well-known boxer from around town started on him. And this guy just flipped him upside down and ended up snapping his wrist. And we're just like, what the fuck? What? Where did this come from? Turns out it was a fourth in Aikido black belt. So it's like, wow, so this stuff actually does work if it's on the element of surprise. In the ring, it's not going to work. Nobody's denying that. But, with Aikido, like every martial art, like, you know, if you can catch these people with some of these techniques, like Kempo, for example, you catch them with fatal deviation or five swords or whatever, you'll do some damage. You will do some damage. Like, and that's why I don't understand why Kempo doesn't incorporate all those sequences into their combat styles, because it's an array of it's a massive array of techniques that is learned. Like white belt, as you said before, it's like, you know, maybe 13, 14 techniques. How many techniques in the green belt do you have to learn?
In my particular school, it is 16 techniques per belt. And then once you get start learning the brown belt techniques, then it's 20 techniques per belt. In total, it's 154 base techniques. And then you start getting into the extensions. But the thing with the techniques is, you know, they're not designed for you to do them in, what I would describe it as a textbook situation. You know, you're going to, you know, if you're doing an attack, you know, most of the time, you know, you hit somebody with a shot, you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to need to do, you know, all of five swords. In most cases, you know, you're going to take somebody out with that first, you know, first shot or two. The techniques are, you know, meant to be a blueprint and not so much a step-by-step or, you know, a photocopy or an exact, you know, you're going to do this.
This is where the variation
is just used as a blueprint of how to deal with various situations.
Yeah.
And then you alter the variables, you know, based on what you're given. So, I wouldn't expect you to see, see full techniques in a combat situation. And then also, you know, once again, you have to look at, you know, there are things that you can only go so far in your training with someone in the moves that you can do on them, you know, with, you know, if we could do all of our techniques with the full power and full intention, you know, there would be nobody left for class because we'd all be either too injured or dead to show up for class. So you have to kind of adjust the lens that you look at these things, at least the way, you know, that I see it.
Because when we were training, when I was training in Washington, what we do is, like, my instructor walked down the line and all of a sudden he out of nowhere, he'd throw something at us, like, you know, whether it be a punch or a kick or something. And we're expected to block it. Like, he always told us to expect the unexpected. And the first dozen or so times we always got tagged, but after a while you can just sense it. You can just, like, he's gonna throw something at me. It's like, and 9 times out of 10 he will, and you just deflect it and throw something back with your own, whatever it might be. And it works very well because it makes you more aware of your surroundings as well. So and it worked, especially in when I was working in the clubs, like bouncing in clubs, and that it worked very, very well because you're always on your toes. And I've seen a lot of bouncers, they take their eye off the ball for 1 second, next thing you know, they've got you. It's like, you know, if you're constantly You might not even be aware that you're aware, but it's just become second nature.
Yeah, and that comes with, you know, that's why we train, is, you know, to help ingrain those abilities and those senses and that perception, so that you can, you know, should you have to use your skills in a real situation, you know, the more that you train and the better that you train, it puts that deeper into your skill set and allows you to be able to increase your, you know, ability to react to those situations. So yeah. It's definitely important.
When I was working in the clubs, like I had to do a night with like some sort of award ceremony or something like that, for a bunch of boxers and kickboxers, and like during the ceremony, fine. Afterwards, not an issue. We thought we had extra security on that night because we thought it might kick off, but it didn't. And it boggles the mind. I can't understand why is it that the people that can really hurt someone, that can really knows how to fight, they don't go out and start it. But it's the people that can't fight for shit that always start the trouble. They always start. I don't understand it. It's stupidity at its max. These people that can't fight are always the ones that start it. They run their mouths, and a lot of these boxers, I've seen it. A lot of these boxers, what doesn't matter what art you're in, they don't want the trouble. They know what they know. They can hurt someone, but they don't want to because they know what to do. But these guys, they run their mouths and then they end up getting their asses handed to them. And maybe you can shed some light on it, because I'm I have no idea. Well,
I mean, that's part of the martial arts. You know, we learn to fight so that we don't have to. I would think of, you know, you look at the Kenpo creed, you know, it's, you know, saying that, you know, we're coming to you with empty hands, you know, we don't have any weapons, but, you know, if we have to use them, then, you know, then we will. And, you know, if, you know, when you know all of these various techniques and things like that, you know, it should change your mindset in that you don't want to seek out trouble. You don't want to seek out, you know, fighting people, because you know, not only because you know that you know, you are dangerous with this knowledge and this training, but you should also kind of see that there is a peaceful side, and it should give you a greater sense of, you know, what's important, you know, getting into, you know, some street fight with, you know, somebody that's drunk or high is really serves no purpose, and nobody wins, or at least the way that I see it, you know, no one wins a fight. Yeah, there might be somebody that's knocked out, might be somebody that's bloody, whatever, but if I get into a fight with someone, neither one of us win anything. And so I see, you know, avoiding conflict is, you know, a better way to live life than to get into a fight. So I see that, you know, people with training want to stay away from that.
Yeah, that's what training is for. Like, I mean, if you want to fight, jump in the ring. It's but unfortunately, as I said to you, like, you know, it's the ones that can't fight and know they can't fight are always the ones that start it. And they only ever throw one technique, that big right haymaker. That's the only thing they ever throw, because that's the only thing they know. It's and like, you know, and then you get some well-known martial artists, and these people that can't fight still try to pick them. I don't understand it. I mean, usually there's drugs or alcohol involved, but the ones that where it's not, it's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Are you serious? Like, I mean, the martial arts dojo is the best place in the world. As far as I'm concerned, it's the best place in the world, because it's the one place where friends can kick the hell out of one another and still be friends afterwards. And you're not going to find any bullshit there. You're not going to find any racism. You're not going to find any of that crap. You're not going to find it in the dojo. Because as soon as there's an element of it, they throw you out. So, like, you know, because I've trained with Filipinos, Japanese, African-Americans, whatever. And, like, we're all wearing the same uniform. We're all friends. So, yeah, it's the best place in the world. It really is. The dojo, and people don't understand it. People that don't aren't in this world will never understand it. Like, boxing is the only sport I know where millionaires punch the crap out of one another. It's the only one. But yeah, it is the best place to be. Well, I love it. It's like, I'm only just getting back into it now. My sensei is flying over to New Zealand next year. We're going to get start another dojo over here, and he wants me to run it. So it's like, all right, let's do it. So I think teaching probably be the better way to go, because I think if everyone knew a martial art, like, you know, an effective one, you wouldn't have half the bullying in the schools. You wouldn't even have half of it. Like, you'd have hardly any trouble. It's like if everyone walked around with a gun, the level of crime just drops significantly. So, because nobody wants to rob someone that's got a gun. So, it makes all the sense in the world that if everybody had some martial arts knowledge or some fight knowledge, you wouldn't have half the fights you have now. Not even half of them. So, I just think, like, the world has gone soft, and is personally, this is just my opinion, I think it's because of McDojos, because they're teaching nonsense, they're teaching stuff that doesn't work, they're going out and starting shit because they think they can fight, but they actually can't. Yeah, it's like, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, you had dojos and all that sort of thing. You had the old street fight or two, but not to the level it is now, like all over the place. It, not just not just here in New Zealand, in Australia. I dare say you get your fair. Where are you from in America?
I'm in the Dallas, Texas area.
Yeah, you probably get a fair few fist fights over there too. But if everyone knew a bit of martial arts, which will also teach them a bit of respect and discipline, which I'm sorry to say that not many people have anymore, you'd have a lot less trouble out in the streets. You'd have a lot less of it. And that's just my opinion. You'll probably get a few comments in the comment section. Hold on a sec. Yeah, I don't understand why it is the way it is these days. Like, you know, got all your McDojos teaching nonsense and they're going out thinking they can fight when they can't. And this is where the trouble, and as you said, if you can avoid the fight, because nobody really wins a fight, and you're 100% right, because let's just say you absolutely lay someone out. Then you've got assault charges to deal with. Then you've got this to deal with. Then you've got that to deal with, lawsuits and this and this and that. And from what I've seen about America, it's the land of the lawsuit. So people sue anybody over anything over there. So yeah, that's just my opinion. That's just from what I've seen. So yeah, I don't understand it.
So I have a few kind of fun little questions here as we get close in on our time here. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Kenpo. If I had to pick one, it'd be fatal deviation. Love it. It's such a good move. You can actually see that one working out in the thing because of the it's more than one attack, and you just defend, and then just bang, attack them. But that the fatal deviation would have to be my favorite.
Okay. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Not really. Because I've only just started me Kempo journey in the last year or two, but I've had to take some time off due to injuries and whatnot. So I'm not too familiar with the four. Like I learned them, but I've forgotten them at the same time. So I don't really have a favorite form or set.
Okay. No problem there. Okay. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would you wish that you could train with?
Oh, this is a tough one. If I had to pick one, probably Chuck Norris.
Yeah, excellent choice.
Chuck Norris. Yeah. Because can't go wrong he's with probably him. One of the most respected people in all on earth, and he didn't do it by going around beating the shit out of everybody he saw. He kept to his roots. He taught. He's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and I think he even still trains to this day. Not as hard, obviously, but I'm pretty sure he still does it, and that's dedication for you. He's the embodiment of dedication. Yeah, I mean, he's dedicated to his art. Dedicated to his martial arts and whatnot, and it shows. I mean, he's got a great fight record. I mean, him and Bruce Lee trained one another, and he's very humble. I mean, I watched an interview with him, and he said, like, if that fight with you and Bruce Lee was real, who would have won? He said, Bruce Lee would have killed me. So he's humble as. And that, I think if everyone was a bit like him, like, you know, took some elements from him, it's like, you know, the world would be a better place.
Awesome, awesome. All right, and then my final question. So in honor of Ed Parker's love for jokes and humor, do you have a joke you want to kind of send us out with?
Not really.
No problem. All right. Well, yeah, I want to thank you for being on and having a little chat with me. And I look forward to getting this out and letting everyone hear your story. And this now would be the time for you to if there's anything that you wanted to bring up that we haven't discussed, or anything you want to promote or whatnot. This is your chance to say that.
I would like to promote my sensei's name, Darren Lee. He once had 7 schools gone, but when COVID hit, he dropped down to 1. I'm trying to get his name back out there as well, because like Washin Khan, it's a brilliant style. It's a very aggressive style, which is very good too. I want to put his name out there too. So he's one of the best senseis one could ask for. He's one of the best.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you again. And I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. And I just thank you for your time.
No problem. All right, Mike.
All right. You have a great day.
See you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.